Hello and welcome to episode 13 of Chips of Chorlton. My name's Neil and I am joined by Robin.
Hiya.
Duncan.
Merry Christmas, Neil.
Merry Christmas to you as well, Duncan. And Andy, three members.
Hello.
Hello, three members of Dutch Uncles. And this week, to end the series one of Chips of Chorlton, we have, I'd probably say, we've been calling our guests special guests, but you're more of a super guest.
Oh, bless you.
You know, so it is a bit weird. But yeah, I've been wrecking my mind all week for how to introduce you, but I suppose, I don't know, no introduction needed. Simon Rimmer, thank you very much.
Lovely to be here, gentlemen.
I think it's quite a coup for Chips of Chorlton, to be honest.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm honoured.
It is pretty much.
We haven't started yet.
Yeah. Let's see how much of the edit we take out. Yeah. So, we usually start off with what's been going on. How are things? What have you been up to?
It's weird. It's always this time of year when you start reflecting on looking back and think, what have I done? And because my world is quite diverse, so you have the telly talk part of it, yeah. Which is great. You know, Sunday Brunch has been a good year. We've had some great guests. We've had lots of fun on it, and it keeps going. I did another series of Tricks of the Restaurant Trade, which did well, which is a really nice show. We start another one next year. And then work-wise, my proper job, if you like. So we now have opened three or two restaurants this year. Three restaurants this year.
just the three restaurants.
I've now bizarrely got 13 restaurants.
Jesus, wow. Have you?
It's like been a proper grown up, and I'm not quite sure how it happened.
How do you keep tabs on all those restaurants?
Well, I'm actually now recognizing it. Is it 14 or 13?
just one gone missing.
But the interesting thing is when you get to this size as a business, it's easier than it was when we had three.
Okay.
So when you have three, then you're still the boss of everything. You know, you order the toilet roll, you'll push the bin back into place and
There's no toilet roll now.
Yeah, exactly. And now I just point and say, can somebody move that bin? Because you do at that point where, you know, we employ, you know, in excess of 800 people. So you have to have a proper grown-up line of stuff, you know, where you've got, now we've suddenly got things like HR and IT and food development. So it changes. So it's been a good year, I think. I think it's been pretty decent. I can't grumble.
Good.
Since we're a music podcast-ish as well, have you had any musical highlights of the year or gigs?
I think the highlight of my year music-wise was Chic. Castlefield Bowl. I mean, I've always been a massive Chic fan, even as a kid. My sister is the world's biggest Chic fan, and I'm quite friendly with Ralph Rolls, the drummer. Unbeknown to my sister, she came with me, and we were on stage dancing with them at the end.
Nice.
I genuinely thought my sister was going to pass out. You know when you go to a gig sometimes, and it is every second of it makes you feel amazing. And that gig was exactly that, you know. Yeah. It was a beautiful summer's night. It was, you know, and they're such a great band. That is probably my highlight, I reckon, this year.
Oh, great stuff.
Yeah, I remember being on the tram with Chic fans coming back into Chorlton that night, actually. There's so many sequin tops and trilbies.
Yeah.
Together.
Together.
Together, yeah. I kind of felt like I was on a tram of, like, reject extras from a top loader video. But at the same time, I was like, but they're all full of love. They've had a great time. Yeah. And then I was really excited to see Chic at Glastonbury. But I think it was a bit of a skittish moment. We were trying to decide what stage to go to. It's like, oh, wait a minute. Chic's going on right there. Then I think they opened on, like, a medley of four of their biggest songs.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. Well, they just did that in 8 minutes. So let's go and see what else is happening.
Well, yeah. He did this thing and they sort of said, you know, so we've done some of the hits, but now we're going to play you a medley of other songs that I've written. And you're there going, oh my God.
It's nuts,
you've
isn't it?
You actually invented pop music.
Yeah, it's nuts. I don't know, we were all there when we saw them at Festival 6 a few years ago, and it was, I think it was
5 years ago now. So that's when they started touring again. And they've just done an album, haven't they? And so... saw him 5 years ago. It was incredible.
I've seen him. I have guiltily watched a little bit of the X Factor recently, and he genuinely seems like a lovely guy as well.
Yeah.
Like, none of it's gone to his head. He's just all about the sort of interpersonal relationships, and that's how he gets great guests. And you know, he's just a genuine guy.
He also gave us one of the biggest fines this year on Sunday Brunch, because we get fined if people swear. And he was telling this. He was telling this amazing story about Billy Idol, and he managed to use what we'd call category A swear words throughout, and we got fined. So thanks, Niall.
No, I mean, we can swear on this podcast. Maybe we shouldn't go too far on it, but yeah, I think everyone could imagine.
Yeah. I just can't imagine A-list, A-category.
Yeah.
A-band swear words coming out such a kind of a smiley face. You know, yeah. Someone that gives such a positive vibe. Yeah.
I suppose talking about...
Like with a smiley face or the question mark?
People listening can't see your face, though, when you say
that. I saw it. It was the loveliest word I've ever seen.
With a smiley face and a question mark.
Yeah, to talk about Chic and stuff. So I went to see Johnny Marr. So a tenuous link, that, isn't it?
That's fine.
Is that fine? Because
fine.
Johnny named his son Niall. Yeah. Sorry, my dog keeps losing her ball underneath the couch, and he's looking at me going, "Get the fucking ball!"
It's like, come on, mate.
I'm a really big fan. I'll send her that way.
Never work with children, animals, and chefs.
Jesus. You know the great.
It's like an episode of Sunday Brunch, isn't it? So I went to see Johnny Marr at the Apollo, and I was I love his new record. I don't know if you had a chance to.
Yeah.
And I went with a load of people. Obviously, just I felt like they were only there to listen to the Smiths songs that he was playing.
Yeah.
And all of the songs that he played that I adore off his new record, no one was asked about, and I'm really frustrated. I was really annoyed at the crowd in Manchester.
You'll always get that with the sort of, in inverted commas, legacy acts. You'll always get that with them, that people just aren't going to be bothered about. They've bought tickets before hearing that record and haven't bothered listening to it.
Yeah, you're right. Isn't that the justification the Specials have said that they're never going to produce any new music because nobody gives a damn about it?
It's a sort of realistic approach, really.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you tour because people want to hear the songs, and these sort of legacy acts are touring because they want to hear specific songs, and those songs are from the past, and that's just sort of the way it is.
But I suppose I've seen Interpol as well, and recently, 3 days before actually the Marr gig, and whether they fall into the same category, because you know, people
they
do
kind of do.
Yeah, yeah.
They kind of do, but in their own way, they're a sort of cult band. In a sense where they're very popular but don't get any, you know, massive mainstream radio play for them.
I think they know that their first two albums are their most cult albums, and people want to hear the majority of those. I wouldn't say
headlining Apollo and Brixton Academy makes it a cult album. I think it just makes it an indie classic, doesn't it?
What's the difference?
What a nice hair split.
Kind of.
I think if people are going to call, like...
But, you know, it ain't underground. It never really was underground from the very off. They had, you know, very high up video direct. You know, they had a very strong visual aspect going on.
Yeah, but is that an issue full stop, right? So as a band, if I ask you a lot of questions, so you write something that becomes an immense classic. Obviously, all of your tracks have been.
Have we?
I just don't want to qualify that. So, moving forward, so 10 years down the line, and you write something new, and you go, oh, Jesus Christ, we've got to play that lollipop song again because everybody loves it. You know, what do you do? You know, do we kind of satisfy the fans who are paying good money to do it? Or do you go, listen to our great new stuff?
Yeah, so Simon, this in Dutch Uncle's world is called the facing question. You know what I mean?
Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
The facing question, it's only ever really a question because our sound engineer fucking hates it. And so he always says, I wouldn't play that tonight, guys. I don't think the room's good for it. Yeah.
No offense to you, Phil,
if you're listening. If you are listening, Merry Christmas. Hello.
Your label called it Your Boys Don't Cry, didn't they?
Did they?
That's unreasonably gushing. That's horrible.
But I felt like it's a huge hit. You're right. It's a huge hit off the first record that we kind of didn't play, did we, a lot of the last year?
No.
The last Big Balloon campaign, true. Yeah.
But I don't think that many people missed it, though, to be honest. We're not at that stage where it was a massive hit, you know.
I missed it.
We've had bigger songs since.
I don't think there's any outcry if we play or don't play anything. repertoire. But Facing genuinely is that song for us, and I'm sure other bands have this kind of song as well, and I'd be interested to know which bands have which song that is like this. When we play Facing, it is the one that more often than not changes the fortune in the room for, you know what I mean? Like, it's that moment where, like, you play that and you've changed the atmosphere all of a sudden. You've got the attention. You've got people like ready to, like, you know what I mean? If say like your first two or three songs have kind of, they've gone down warmly, but they've not sort of captured people's imagination as to where this night could lead, and then you put that one in there,
your golden oldie. Yeah,
yeah, you put in your golden oldie, but it's still got, like, I don't know where I never know what I'm going to do whenever we play it, and that's nice if you've still got that mystery with the song.
People
like
do
that.
Say that.
Yeah. Well, no, but that's, but if you can still find the mystery in it for yourself, and you're the one that's played it the most, then that's what matters, really.
I suppose you're right. Well,
I forgot where did this even start from?
No, but it's a good point, though. It's a good point about conviction. We were talking about conviction in music more and more, and earlier time when we were having a drink about. And I was going to relate this to.
You just
later point,
that we're having a drink with you.
Drink with Simon Rimmer. Check it out, Mum.
And we will be talking about Neil's Kitchen later on as well.
Oh, yes.
Very nice kitchen. It's very contemporary,
sake, man. He's soaking this up. He loves it.
That grey is so now.
don't worry. We'll eventually get round to this live, laugh, love sign.
No, but I think I wanted to bring it back to the Sunday Brunch Live guests about that sort of conviction and the Sunday Brunch aspect that and effect that it has on people's careers. Do you think it's because it's stripped back more? And do you think the sort of conviction of the song and the sort of bare bones of it come out more? They don't have the sort of dependency on production value. Do you think guests come across better if the song is genuinely great?
I think that's very true. I think there are three things that happen with Sunday Brunch guests. The pared back version of it, when you get somebody who's got something that's a big song and they sit there with the guitar and just strum and sing, that's really beautiful. But then equally, last time the Charlatans were on, they did a full-on electric set, and that was magnificent because it just absolutely... And as did Slaves, which were fantastic. I mean, one of the best live performances we've ever had on the show. But the other thing that really works is location with Sunday Brunch, because we get amazing music acts on, and they stand on our rug with a sofa behind them. It's almost like the Young Ones kind of moment.
Yeah.
You're not on a stage. Like, if you do Jules Holland and you're in a proper performance area, if you like,
you got this,
it's
big
the same bit.
Ice cube.
There's still things to capture the eye on Jules Holland. Yeah. There's different lighting.
It's you know, you're still there with the same kind of lighting where we've sat and interviewed Lorraine Kelly, and then suddenly Slaves are playing live music. There is something I think that is quite charming about that location that makes it work as well.
I think that's it. I think it is. It's modest, obviously, on a very high profile show with a massive audience. But in the same sense, it's sort of like someone's playing in your living room. And people get that. I feel like that comes across.
Where's Stormzy? Standing on our rug playing. I mean, he was just starting to kind of break through. And you only look back and you go, that's kind of quite ridiculous. Isn't it? Those kind of things are amazing.
Yeah,
that's great. Well, should we talk about some of the we do have on the list? I suppose we'll talk about Sunday Brunch of stuff. So I suppose we were chatting in the pub before about you've been putting music on TV since 2006, pretty much. I mean, from something from the weekend to this transition to Sunday Brunch and things like that. How has it changed over the last 12 years? You know, are you finding more artists coming to you to say, I need to be on your show? Has the genres changed to a more pop away from indie? What's happened in the last 12 years?
I think all of the above, really. I think when we first started, you would always dread having an indie band on. Because they always wanted to be a little bit too cool for school. So they didn't really want to promote. They felt that their image was everything. They'd never take the jackets off. And if they're in a cooking item, then they would genuinely stand with one hand and sort of slightly side saddle. Yeah. And they'd never join in with it. Whereas now, everybody knows that the show works. So we sell tickets, we sell music, etc. So that's one thing. The industry itself, I think, that you can't afford to be... you can't afford to be that anymore. You know, if you're trying to make your way, I think Blossoms are a really good example of an indie stroke pop band who say, you know what, if we're going to come on a show, let's be nice guys, let's join in and let's embrace the environment that we're in and make something happen. So they're quite a good example of that crossover. And then outside of that, the change in it is that, you know yourselves, you've got to perform all the time. You know, your income is made from standing there playing live gigs and selling tickets, more so than kind of selling music. And I think as a result of that, if people come on and do a good performance, people go, they look really good fun. I want to watch. I like their music, and they look like they'll be good fun. And it has changed massively.
Because was Top of the Pops still around when you started Smith the Weekend? Is that, was it just hanging on?
I think it's 2006 when it ended. I think it was probably just probably was the crossover, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it might well have gone. But yeah. I mean, there's only really us and Jules Holland who regularly have live modern music on terrestrial British TV.
Has there been any really big success stories from performances on Sunday Brunch where it's made like a huge difference in perhaps like an album charting, or
you mean like a Future Islands moment?
Yeah, exactly, like Future Islands Lemon. Like
when they were I mean that was kind of quite amazing. That whole thing was really quite incredible. I mean, I think the one at the very top end, at the chart end of it, Little Mix, when they played, they were number 7 in the midweeks. They were number 1 by the end of Sunday Brunch.
Right.
So that was a really big success. And the Saturdays did a very sort of similar thing. And then in terms of acts who've made really big impact, wow, there's so many that people have kind of picked up on. And even though she's a really sort of well-known performer, in recent times, when we had Christina and the Queens on, the response to her was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Absolutely phenomenal. I think because
is there enough room to dance on that rug?
Of course. You know, but that whole thing where people suddenly saw somebody who they might have heard the track on the radio, then seeing her do it live, it really exploded, and the response was phenomenal.
Yeah, I think I agree. I first saw Christine and the Queens on Jules Holland, and I kind of, you know, I mean, that was the one that, and I can see a change in Jules Holland, basically. I don't know whether we can, you know, I kind of feel like it's getting a little bit more sort of safer almost. As there are less places for bands to go and play on TV, I feel like it's getting a bit more.
Well, I feel like they're sort of waiting a little bit longer before an act has enough buzz behind it for it to be a safe bet in the coming months almost.
They're not taking the risk.
I don't know. They've still had some, I mean, when they put Shame on, when that happened, there was quite a backlash from that I thought was quite surprising. It's like, I think the fella was wearing dungarees and he took his top off. Yeah, he did that, but I think people didn't quite get where he was coming from with his aggression within the song. I thought it was perfectly fine. I was amazed that people just, it's that thing where people are arguing both sides of the bias point of like, oh, this is just too edgy, or no, it's not even that, this is far too safe. Obviously people just don't know what they're saying. I don't know what I'm saying right now.
I tell you, the performer probably who people's perception changed was Sigrid. Do you know her?
Oh, yeah.
She was brilliant. She did a really great interview. She was really charming and lovely and intelligent and had some really good stories and was very humble. And we showed a little clip of her and she cried seeing the clip because she'd done something at college with Pharrell Williams. And she cried when we showed the clip, and then when she performed at the end, everyone had already fallen in love with her.
Yeah,
and it was just phenomenal. So I mean, she's a prime example of a really good.
Mind me to cross over the aspects of the show. Which musician's been the best in the kitchen, would you say?
Oh yeah.
Or at least the most helpful.
Because have you had Khalees on?
Khalees, but I mean, she's actually brilliant. She's really good. I mean, the ones that are good fun, I mean, Ollie Murs is genuinely always an amazing guest.
People tell me that I look a little bit like Ollie Murs.
I can see that.
David Cameron.
So somewhere between Ollie Murs and David Cameron. Thanks for clearing that up, everyone.
Well, and he's actually invented a technique that we have a blue plaque for, the Ollie Murs technique. Because basically, when he was on, I said that when you fold flour through a cake mix, you have to bend your knees to do it to stop you overworking the flour.
Okay.
And Ollie being Ollie just sort of really embraced it.
Yeah.
And so it is actually known as the Ollie Murs technique, and we've got lots of people to do it. So it's
scientifically proven to make the bake better.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So how much of it, going back, how much of it is the interview over the performance on Sunday Brunch that really sells that artist?
That's a really good question. I think if you do, because, right, so the reality with music on TV is people turn off when music's on. Yeah, you know, that figures sort of show that you'll sort of see, like, you know, the 30-second break bumper when we have our playlist on, figures drop.
Right.
And that, live that,
that's,
music.
That's been, we've been on, isn't
that's
it?
That's the bit we've been on.
There was one particular
was that
week.
That particular sample.
One particular week when it just dropped off like
zero.
The scale.
Absolutely plummeted. I think there was a strike at Channel 4 that day. I'm not sure it got broadcast.
I suppose what I'd say is, if you to counterbalance that, if you do a good interview, then I would say it would encourage people to stay and watch the performance at the end. Sigrid being a good example of that.
Yeah.
Whereas if you sit there and you're miserable and you don't engage and you look like you're not interested in it, then I would guess it probably won't help people stay tuned.
Yeah, regardless of your musical performance after, yeah. No yeah. one's going to be yeah. engaged enough to
go. Yeah, by the time your live performance comes, if you've not done enough to get people to sort of stay there, then they'll, yeah. They'll, yeah. they'll have gone.
Yeah, I think people are bored of the sort of, you know, oh, I'm not arsed kind of rock star mm. sort of stance, you know. Like we were saying about the Gallagher brothers before and how they can split opinion because a lot of people don't like the personality. Yeah. It's that same kind of thing, like, you know, we've seen it all before. Like, come on, just have a chat. Just be, yeah. just, you know.
Well, I think, you know.
Unless that is who they are. But quite often it is an act, isn't it?
Well, that's yeah. it. And I think at the end of the day, if you think, you know, we all have multi-channels to choose from. And if you choose to kind of click onto our show, and then you're sitting there investing your time, albeit passively, because normally you're hungover and there's nothing else on, so it's just on anyway.
Not just the guests.
It is fantastic hangover telly.
I'm genuinely always surprised. I've said this to the marketing people at Channel 4. Why he've never got Nurofen or Barocca?
Yes, Barocca.
If ever there was a fit.
Oh, my God. If I saw an advert for Barocca, like, that first half hour, yeah, I'd be out of Tesco immediately.
So I think that if you invest your time in doing it, if you then sit there and someone is sitting there going, not being bothered, you go, well, I'll turn over. I'm watching you. Like, entertain me. That's our job. Our job is to entertain.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, I was watching this show recently, and Professor Green, we were talking about before, talking of hangovers. So the only way I can put it was Professor Green looked like what I was like in work the morning after the Mike Joyce podcast. Basically, so that's a regular occurrence.
I quite like it normally. But I think what's interesting these days, because of social media, normally people forewarn us that they're going to be hungover.
Of course. So you're going to get like, so at Sunday brunch, he's like half four in the morning shot. Yeah, shots.
Exactly. Professor Green kind of tweeted at about 1 o'clock in the morning going, Sunday brunch is going to be a long 3 hours. So, you know, we get there quite a lot. But I mean, I was saying to you guys in the pub before, the most rock and roll that we've had on was Charlie XCX, who was great. She's a really great girl. She's really funny. And she had to have a bowl behind the kitchen counter because she was convinced she was going to throw up.
Was this a bowl provided by her people or the Sunday brunch people?
I mean, now you're asking. I think it might have well been a rock and roll bowl.
Rock and roll bowl.
Yeah, rather than the TV bowl.
You can tell how suitable it is for rock star vomit and how tall it is.
There's some good merch there, boys.
Rockstar vomit bowls.
Yeah, yeah.
Good name for a band as well.
Yeah.
I think because it's the Christmas special, I think we should probably just rip off a Christmas Carol and just replace every word with chips.
Which one?
Chips, chip, 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 chips, 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 chips,
chips, chips, chips, chips, chips, chips, chips, chips, chips, chips,
nice.
That's brutal.
Nice.
That's good. That's solid.
It, isn't it? Oh, no, it's a Live, Laugh, Love song.
Every episode.
Sing.
All that hipster so bullshit the Duncan brings to it's the... We went to Merry and Archie this week for our chips. Where do we start with Merry and Archie? So Merry and Archie were a bar in Didsbury. They've binned off Didsbury, haven't they?
Yeah.
They started off. So the story behind Merry and Archie is Merry and Archie were the grandparents of the owner who left them some money. And with that money, they then opened Merry and Archie in Didsbury. Am I right? I'm sort of looking around.
No idea.
I like that story. Yeah, I'm taking that as gospel.
I'll go with it. I think that's on the Facebook or on their website. But that's what happened. So the grandparents died, left some money. They opened a bar in Didsbury, and the bar in Didsbury did really well. And they opened up the bar in Chorlton. I don't know. I'm not too sure why the Didsbury bar went away. I'm not too sure.
I have a feeling, to carry on this story that may or may not be 100% falsified, I got a feeling they might be opening one in town.
Or there might be something happening in town for them.
And I think that might be why Didsbury's...
I'm doing a sharp intake of breath. That's a big, big dangerous move.
Really? Would you recommend against that?
Suburban location to city centre location. It's a tricky one.
Really? Okay. What's better?
Different entity. It's a completely different beast.
So you have more loyal customers in the suburban areas?
Suburban area, then, yeah, you have ownership. And you go like, you know, Merrion Arch is mine. Yeah. But you don't really have that in the city centre. You know, you don't sort of think a pub bar in the city centre is yours. It's just somewhere that you go amongst others.
And that's true.
Yeah.
Okay. Would it feel like if restaurants don't do that after a while, it starts to feel even more exclusive if they're really popular? A little bit like, I suppose, like Double Zero in Chorlton, which has been rammed every night since it's opened. And I would have thought that they'd have moved, but haven't. I think it's worked for them in a way.
Yeah, and you sort of think if you were Double Zero, then you probably your next one would be they do Chorlton, then do Didsbury, then do Heaton Moor. You know, there's money to be made in these really lovely suburban environments. You know, let's face it, South Manchester's got lots of nice, I use the word wealthy with a small W, but, you know, an informed clientele who would like that.
Yeah.
Whereas for the Double Zero to go into city centre and compete with Rudy's, world's number one pizza restaurant.
Do you have a stake in that?
Yeah.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's one of my 13, 14. Yeah.
Is that the 14th you forgot about?
Yeah. So it's quite hard. It's a different world. So I didn't know that. It's a tricky one.
Ah, to be honest, I've never been. I absolutely love Double Zero.
Yeah, Double Zero is good. I mean, they were voted number three in the UK for best pizza restaurant. Yes. TripAdvisor.
Well, we were talking about TripAdvisor before, weren't we?
Yeah, Rudy was number one. Just, I thought I'd mention that.
Pizza Hut was number two.
CNN Travel in the States, they did a thing about the 10 best pizza restaurants in the UK. Rudy's was number one in that as well. I just thought I'd mention that.
Yeah.
But, you know, this ain't Biggie and Tupac, you know. Simon,
our listenership isn't that great, mate, to push this on it. I didn't realise that.
But we've never been to Rudy's either, so we don't know what to compare it to. We can't get a table.
That's why we don't know. You could sort us out.
Fine. Like,
can you get us a table?
Sorry. Yeah, Friday night, 7 o'clock.
I knew this podcast would do something. Yeah.
We finally get to table at Rudy's. Yeah, we do it.
Yeah. Like, you can sit at the bar and share a pizza between the yeah. Only a margarita.
Restricted access to the toilet.
Like it.
Right, chips.
Yeah, chips. Sorry, absolutely digressed.
That's blowing my mind, Simon. I didn't know you did. Right. Okay, great. We're in.
Okay, so Merrion Arch, Chorlton. What's everyone's opinion on it as a bar?
Well, I feel like over the last 12 episodes, we've failed to articulate in any way what a good chip is. So I'd like to open the floor to our guest and see if you had any opinions.
Well, okay. So you chip. Obviously, your king of chip would be a freshly produced chip, which you'd triple cook. So you use something like a Maris Piper, so you could not too waxy, but not too kind of flowery. And then the first thing you'd do, I'm going to go skin on because I do like kind of skin on chips. And then your first process is that you peel the chips, then you soak them in water, ideally overnight, so you remove a little bit of the starch. So you'll end up, what you want is that crispy exterior and fluffy interior. Once you've done that, then you drain them really, really well. And then you'll blanch them at 120 degrees C, maybe even as low as 100 degrees C, to just soften them. And then you take them out of that, and then you'll lay them as flat as you can so they don't break down. Let them go completely cold. Then when they're completely cold, you'll bump up your temp to 180. Then you'll deep fry them for approximately 6 to 8 minutes. You come out, you'll shake them as much as you can to remove excess oil, sit them on some kitchen paper to drain, and then you'll add salt to that, and that will give you your perfect chip.
You could tell you'd never had a real job.
Jesus. And, yeah. And our chip reviews have been absolutely shit.
The last two
have been good.
Yeah.
But that was amazing.
Yeah, thank you. That's really nice. Yeah. But what about Mary and Archie's tonight?
Wait, see, because that was a frozen chip.
Was it?
Yeah.
Do you know the sort of type wholesale that it was? Or?
I would say... No, I couldn't say that. It wasn't a bad frozen chip. It was pretty decent. They'd clearly used... the oil is fresh. There was no flavour of kind of old oil on there, which is always a bad sign with chips.
I'd agree.
They'd been well cooked. They weren't overcooked. They were undercooked. They were still crisp, even though I arrived after you gentlemen were already there. But I hated the bloody garlic crap on it.
Yeah.
The seasoning or the...
Yeah, the garlic seasoning, I really do.
I love garlic. I'm a vegetarian, so garlic is one of the vices I throw into everything, really. You know, whether that's right or wrong, I don't know.
There's no right and wrong, Neil. There's no right and wrong.
Thank you, Simon.
This is going to expose some gargantuan ignorance on my behalf here, but is it not quite tough being a chef if you don't like garlic?
I don't hate it. All right, what I hate about garlic is, so, for example, I mean, I didn't sort of see what you'd ordered, so I would have known when I'd reached in that they were garlic chips. So if I know there's garlic in it and there's supposed to be garlic, I'm happy with it. So if I went round to your house for dinner and you cook spaghetti bolognese...
I've only got one chair, so...
First of all, you have to bring around a chair.
Bring your own chair, but yeah.
Overpoweringly garlicky, I'd really hate it. Okay. Because it's not garlic bolognese sauce. When it's used right, then I really like it. I just don't like the...
I wonder whether my sort of ignorance about cooking and sort of flavour in general is that I always think that garlic and salt are flavour to me. But maybe I'm sort of a little bit ignorant about that and...
Flavourless or flavour...
That they are flavour for
me. Yeah, they are. But I think it's, you know, they're, if you have... say, for example, like there's a salsa dip there. So I would hate that to be too garlicky.
Yeah.
Because I want to taste it. On the front, it's showing onions, it's showing peppers, and it's showing tomato. And they're the flavours I want. The garlic, there might be garlic in there as a back flavour.
Yeah.
It's a bit like having a backing singer who is louder than the lead vocalist.
And you wouldn't want to kiss.
All right, Rob. Yeah.
That's really good.
That was great. Great, to be fair. Yeah.
That was great. So what do you guys like to think about it then? What do you guys...
Well, we've tasted a lot of chips, and we were talking the other day about how, well, and before, about how we sort of failed to articulate it properly, I think. Like with the live podcast in London, we sort of got the chips and then just said they were crap and that was about it. Yeah. There's anything constructive in there. We didn't sort of analyse it in any way. But I thought they were all right. Like I said before, like I do... If it has salt and garlic in it, I'm pretty much going to like it. So I liked it.
So we usually do scores for the chips, don't we?
Yeah.
And after the scores, I just want to pick up, because obviously we have someone who's involved in just...
Who?
Who's here? Involved in sort of bars and restaurants. So I want to pick up on greens and just general bars and how that's moved, as well as music has, you know.
Stuff.
So we'll pick up on that in a sec. So can we score...
I've got my phone out and I've opened the calculator. Neil.
Oh, I'm going to give it 6.1. We decimalise as well, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So out of 10, with a point if you want.
Okay.
So 6.1. 6.1 for me.
Robin?
7.8.
Ooh. 7.8. Wow. Duncan?
I'm in a very jovial mood here, Andy. You know, it's the Christmas special.
Absolutely.
And, you know, yeah. And I was really... And maybe it's just the time of day. Again, I don't know. Why am I bringing that into it? I'm going to go 8.2.
Oh,
wow. Jeez. I was going to go higher, but then you started pulling a face as soon as I said 8.
Did
so
I?
8.2. Yeah, 8.2.
Sorry, mate. Simon?
I'm going to go 6.8. Chips were good. Garlic was bad.
Nice. I think they take that. I'm going to go 7.4.
Okay.
And
divide by 5.
That's what I always get wrong, innit?
Yeah, he went 11 and a half out of 10.
He went to music college. Yeah, bless him.
More of that later. So it's 7.3. Is the overall
that's
score.
A decent score.
I think that's good. I think that really might good. Be the highest.
I think that's the winning highest. Score by 0.1.
I think it might be.
Or maybe 0.2.
Yeah, is it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
We should really make a leaderboard.
We should. Yeah. We should. This has been the ultimate, the only request of the podcast.
I feel like one of those people on Come Dine With Me that changes the result by giving a ridiculously high score. What? Two. Yeah, just to really sabotage the whole game.
So speaking of West Disbury and Shorten bars and pubs and stuff, Greens, we were saying before, nearly 30 years old.
28 years old.
Fucking hell. Did you imagine when you got that you'd be here?
No.
Sort of knocking on.
You'd be here on this podcast.
Maybe here on this podcast.
It was always my dream, Neil. But I never thought I'd achieve it. Sitting looking at a beautiful grey kitchen in a fantastic suburban house in Chorley.
Because as we were saying, again, we chatted about this on the cab on the way here, vegetarian and veganism is peak. It's its highest. And Did you think that when you had Greens or, you know, when you started in the 90s?
So we opened Greens in 1990 and basically Simon, my business partner from Greens and I, we were looking to buy somewhere that was cheap. That was the pure premise of what we were looking at.
In West Didsbury, cheap?
When we opened 28 years ago, like now, you know, you have the Metropolitan, which is, you know, a cracking pub, and Burton Road is full of kind of like, you know, trendy bars that kind of people go to. When we were there, then the Metropolitan was called the Midland, and they used to openly deal drugs in the car park in the daytime. West Digit was very, very different.
Okay.
And so then the Lime Tree had opened 2 years ago across the road from us. Nose Wine Bar had opened about a year before. And Greens existed as a very sort of downbeat veggie calf. So when we bought it, we really didn't know quite what we were going to do. And it just took off. But you're right. I mean, 28 years down the line, did I think we'd do it? And we're three times the size. We built backwards. Then we bought the shop next door. Yeah. And it still feels relevant. You know, we're still busy. We still sort of feel that what we're doing is contemporary and modern. We're not resting on our laurels. We're not thinking, we'll just kind of crack on, keep doing the same stuff. Keep pushing it on all the time. I'm dead proud of it. It's my firstborn, basically.
Right.
You know, it still has that massive, massive amount of pride with it.
Yeah, so the area's just changed, hasn't it?
Yeah. So when I moved to Manchester in 1988, and we opened Greens in 1990, and then I bought my first property in 1993, and a year before, I'd looked at a flat, thought, right, you know, now's the time, I can probably afford to do it. And I balked at the fact that a two-bedroom apartment in Didsbury was £21,000. I thought, no one is ever going to pay that. And now you're looking at, what, 300,000 probably for that now?
Yeah.
And I know it's all relative, but, you know, it's escalated on belief.
So have you ever looked at, I was talking about bars before, sort of bars in Didsbury and Chorlton? What have you?
Well, I quite like Laundrette. So if I'm going to go out in Chorlton, I like Laundrette. I've just started going back into Beagle. I boycotted Beagle for a few years.
Why was that?
Because they took an hour and a half to serve three meals to us once.
And right on. You are exactly right.
And basically told me it was my fault.
They're right. They was right. I've always said about Beagle, their service was fucking shocking.
I'm going to go on the other. I've never experienced
Christmas
that.
Christmas special. Just a bit of cheer.
I'm so glad you've said that, Simon.
I've never experienced that. Just on the other side of it.
I have. I mean, again, that's the reason why we again say the prices.
Yeah.
Prices versus service. I can get away with getting £8 a burger if they used to pay it. It's amazing. But if it, you're right, there was a stage. I think they went through a stage of table service only.
Yeah,
and then all this sort of crap that they. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And I the thing I hate about bars and restaurants anywhere is that whole thing where they actually lose sight of the fact that it's called hospitality for a reason. And, I'm not saying that the customer is always right, but have a smile on your face. If you get something wrong, say you've got something wrong. So I've just started going back into Beagle. I've been three times the last 2 weeks, and I kind of quite like it. So at the moment, I've got a little bit of a honeymoon period with that. Henry C, I really want to do well, because the people that own it are lovely.
I'd say it's the Chips of Chorlton favourite.
It's our favourite bar.
Do they do chips?
Amazing.
Do they do chips?
I don't think they do. It doesn't matter.
If they did, that'd just be 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
It really would.
Yeah. No, it's so good. We were there on Thursday. It's just absolutely brilliant. I love the whole vibe.
The couple that own it are so lovely. I want them to succeed.
Yeah, I think
massively.
They will. But it seems busier now than ever as well.
I suppose what the contradiction is contradicting what I'm saying, but they... It's the service that's so good in Henry C. And I don't mind paying more for good service.
I so want that place to succeed. I really, really hope it does. Because it's hard. A little site like that. The problem with little sites is if you have a bad week, it's much harder to make up with a good week.
Yeah.
So, you know, for example, our bigger site, Albert Schloss, we're 350 customers. So if you have a couple of quiet days, you know at the weekend, you're going to smash it. And you'll make any kind of quiet day up. If you've got a little tiny bar, there's not enough revenue. No matter how busy you are, you've still only got 25 seats, and you can't make more money. So I love Henry C. Laundrette, I still think, is kind of decent. Love the tapas bar on Beach Road.
If you get a seat,
I always can. I'm such a liar.
I was going to say, can we make this a crawl? So can we have lunch at San Juan and then go to Rudy's afterwards?
I had a bit of a fangirl moment in there. I sat behind Guy Garvey, and I'd never met before. And 3 weeks later, he was on the show. And I sat there, and I was with a mate of mine, and said, "It's Guy Garvey." He said, "Go and say hello. He's on your show." And a couple of weeks said, "God, it's Guy Garvey from Albacom." And I sat there and stared at the back of his head. And then somebody went up and chatted to Guy and said, "Simon, remember sitting there?" And Guy Garvey said, "Who?"
Just a
what kind of stupid fucking question is that?
Guy Garvey.
Guy Garvey. Was it Guy Garvey and Ollie Mears? What kind of tribute band are you?
Exactly. Oh, horrible. We need to feel good about ourselves. We only get fans.
This year, the entire world of people I know want to go to Glastonbury. I think I can sort out VIP tickets, but guess what? I can't.
where did I see a picture of you side stage with Slaves?
Leeds.
Okay. So makes more sense actually. Slaves.
Yeah. Wise. So bizarrely, I mean, Leeds is kind of like, you know, somewhere that, you know, a grown adult shouldn't really go.
Yeah.
But my mate Dave Cox does the PR for it. So every year I kind of go because he gets me in the VIP bar where it's all free and you get backstage passes. So I kind of quite like it.
Yeah. Nice. And obviously you're a big Slaves fan. Which
I love Slaves.
Helped at the time.
Brilliant. They did one of the best live sets ever on Sunday Brunch. So they're cracking. Really good guys.
Yeah. Did you hang around and soak any of the atmosphere of Leeds?
That's why I like the VVIP bar. So I go VVIP bar, backstage, back to VVIP bar, backstage. That's it. That's my Leeds.
I felt like I was totally out of place there when I was 19. You know, and I've been having it, you know, it's a great festival, but I think it's a great first festival for people, you know, for teenagers and, you know, kids who are just getting into music. It's got everything that they want there, sort of legacy, more sort of emo acts, and then like breaking band tents as well, you know.
So they've just announced their headliners, haven't they, as well, Leeds, and they've got the Foo Fighters?
1975.
And they announced it on the same day that Blue Dot announced...
Kraftwerk.
Yeah.
That was the criticism of Leeds Festival, because when they announced the headliners, there was no female in there, and there's only one... Was there only one female that has headlined Leeds / Reading in the last 19
in this century?
In this century,
yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah, yeah.
And it is Paramore.
Yeah, which whom you've took?
They only half headlined it as well.
Well, it was a co-headliner. Yeah,
surprising. Well, I mean, at least you get the sort of more varied headliners at Glastow. To be honest,
I'm still absolutely stunned that there's a VVIP bar at Leeds. Like, I've never heard of this. But it makes total sense because the VIP bar, there are definitely a lot of people in there that aren't very V.
Yeah, like us.
You start to look around like, something's not right here.
It's just this big like banging party going on. Like, just like, us.
Why is it just us and Viva Brother here? Like, this isn't a good vibe.
So it's good. Is the last time we spoke, sort of last year, is it your kids go to Glastonbury?
So my daughter's 21, so she's at Queen Mary in her second year, and she will go to every festival in the world if she could. She's been going to festivals since she was 16, and she loves it, and Glastonbury is her thing, and she absolutely does it. But I've never been. Is that terrible?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it really is.
I think it's just been... I've never really... When I was younger...
The food's awful. Just to
When I was younger, then I never really went to festivals. And then now that I'm older, then I work every weekend. So I suppose that's a difficulty.
Yeah. Just a little story about the food at Glastonbury. There was a report that one artisan pizza stall had run out of pizza base. So instead they put all their pizzas on 12-inch tortilla wraps. And sold them for £14 each. And apparently, people didn't notice.
Wow. That's a good story. I like that.
Yeah,
Saturday onwards, wasn't it? Yeah, yeah. Restaurant pro tip. Sequence of the restaurant trade.
Just text in now. Yeah. Don't worry about making that dough. Yeah.
So I suppose with Glastonbury having Stormzy as a headliner... Are we all excited about that? If we had tickets to go to Glastonbury, yes. is that the one you want to see?
It's the bang on headliner. I don't think they could have got it any more right, to be honest. I think it's like, yeah, the most organically grown sort of subculture turned mainstream. Yeah, it's spot on.
It's without doubt the most exciting set that any artist can have to headline Glastonbury, but it does need shaking down. It needs to... I mean, it probably has been the most progressive probably over the years in terms of who they've picked, except for that one year where they had Adele, Coldplay, Mumford & Sons. But even then, Adele, like, that was kind of... That was sort of, like, the difference.
Yeah.
Just. Yeah. Yeah. Because I remember seeing Kanye there.
But what's its remit? You see, I take you to task on that. What is its remit? What's it supposed to do?
It's supposed to champion the sound of the summer. it's probably without doubt the biggest festival in the world, isn't it?
It shouldn't
have to represent where the UK's at. I mean, that's what the Mercury Prize is for, really. I think it
so
has
you wouldn't
to represent...
have Stormzy then, would you? Because Grime has no presence anywhere other
than
the UK.
It's a home advantage, isn't it? To be able to champion... Well, Grime's getting bigger in America now. Like, and maybe this is an opportunity for it to really speak out, even though, I mean, Kanye's kind of championed it at times years back, but I think that's all got a bit lost in the ether.
I think sometimes Glastonbury headliners in particular, they are often unaware of genre, and the more popular and sort of the more you've influenced people are the reason you get those bookings. And I think that's right.
Yeah.
Like, I think Stormzy has probably as much of an influence as any sort of legacy band who could headline it. You know, within modern
I think
culture.
He's a tremendous. I think you're absolutely right. I think he's the perfect fit. Yeah, completely.
I suppose what are the rumours for the legacy band or the big?
On the Sunday evening show? I don't know. I'm not too sure. I know that
Elton John makes sense.
Elton John's a big one. I think he could possibly do 2020 when he finishes touring forever, though. Because I mean, if he's announced his tour in 2020, you'd probably do it then. You know what I mean? Like, it's like that time we did that one gig in Nantes. Yeah. Like, and why did you just do one gig in Nantes? Yeah. A bit like
what you did.
Exactly.
The end of Elton John's career. It's a bit like that time we did that one gig in the west of France.
Our booking agent had booked us for the wrong date first time. So we went back and did that gig solo, and then the promoter came up to us and said, really sorry, I'm not going to do the accent. Yeah. Really sorry, guys. There's probably not going to be many people here tonight. You know, there's a public transport strike. It's fine. Yeah, we didn't make the effort anyway.
It's not like we travelled 14 hours to get here. But we watched the first two series of X-Files all the way through, didn't we? Back to back. B2B, as they say. So that's like the end of Elton John's career. I think Fleetwood Mac is one that's being bandied around, but at the same time, they are the most frustrating pricks, though, aren't they? They can't keep all five of them in a room for 5 minutes. It's so annoying because Lindsay's gone now, so it's like Tango in the Night all over again.
I went to see them at the arena probably about 4 years ago now, and I only like the kind of, you know, the
big stuff.
Rumors kind of and all of that was fantastic, and then all the kind of crappy drug fueled noodly guitar crap, you go, oh Jesus Christ. that whole thing about, like, you know, going back to the start of the conversation, you sort of go, I don't want them to do the old stuff. I want them to just do Rumours and nothing else, because the rest of it's crap.
Just before we go further in this, I just want to say it now. I reckon, want to predict a headliner for next year, Foles.
Okay.
Foles are back, aren't they?
Are they back?
Yeah. They are back. And yeah. I think they're going to fit that 20-1 bet that I won't make. Like I did with, like I did with Arcade Fire. When Arcade Fire came out, Reflector was like,
well, you did that,
they're
doing
it, but I never put the bet on. I'm really... Whatever. But yeah, no, I reckon it'll be Foles. I don't think it'll be 1975 because they've got...
They're doing Reading and Leeds.
They're doing Reading and Leeds.
That's right for them.
And they're going to have another album out next summer with the idea to headline in Glastonbury the year after
and
that.
Which, with the way it's going, you would imagine
that. Yeah, well, Matt Healy said as much in an interview today as well.
I think their current album was going to make them massive.
Yeah.
Well,
we've spoken about this a lot, sort of just together this week. Yeah, I think it's great.
Yeah, that time and place, and they just seem to have really hit their groove. I mean, it's just a fantastic album.
We've been having all sorts of introspective...
We've been having a very gushing weekend.
Because I suppose... You two particularly, you feel like it's really struck a chord you lyrically.
Well, it's quite frustrating to watch a band just kind of do what you really wish you could do, like, but they're just absolutely nailing it. And it's such a brave and fearless album. Granted, you're not going to like all the songs when you listen to it the first time round, but that's the point of the album. It's like, you know, the songs that you don't get the first time, you listen to them again and again, and you find something in there, and they can change your whole perspective on how you should approach everything in life, really. But there's just moments, like, in terms of a highlight of the year, our friend Elliot from the last podcast, he put out a video of them performing I Love It If We Made It at Banquet Records for their album release party. And so they're playing that song. The emotions kind of get into them. You can tell that Matt's voice is, you know, it's quavering a bit. And that happens when you're playing new songs for the first time. But the whole audience is screaming everything back at him, every single lyric. And just that moment where you've got a whole room of teenagers all screaming back the phrase, "I moved on her like a bitch." And you realise that you've actually, you've immortalised, like, the political turning point of whatever's going on here. And that's not going to go away. That's going to be remembered for forever, in a sense. And I don't think anyone's ever quite capitalised on how to absolutely nail it in the moment until you see that crowd sing it back. Yeah. It's like, fuck.
Yeah.
That's so cutting.
And I think you put it like this as well, Dunk, where, you know, this is what pop music should do, in a sense. Like, they're not pandering, but they've really focused on their core audience, which is sort of teenagers, in a sense. But they've left enough sort of morsels and references for other people to sort of grab onto as well.
Yeah.
You know, like the recent video,
Love
It If You Made It, and it's like Talking Heads, Stop Making Sense.
It's Not Living If It's Not With
Sorry,
You.
Yeah.
And they've blatantly taken the Stop Making Sense video, but they've changed it around.
Yeah, but just watching that, there's enough sort of trail of sort of like retro culture that I liked when I was that age, that their core audience, you know, it's
but I guess as well, though, at the moment, then, there's kind of quite a nice thing where, because we do live in a very politicised climate again, for years it's been grey middle ground.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, in the last kind of, you sort of think the last sort of 3 to 4 years, we've become politicised in the UK, globally, with the advent of kind of Trump, etc., etc. All of a sudden, you can't help, as an aware performer, whether you're a comedian, a songwriter, whatever, without having that as a reference point. So it's almost like, you know, they have captured that moment, and being able to do it is amazing.
And the overriding message is, it's a compassionate one. It's not one to say that anyone's right or anyone's wrong. You got to erase the whole winners and losers out of all of this, and I think that's exactly what the album's trying to get at. It's just about honesty, and it's... Yeah, I think it's going to do them no end of good. Yeah.
So it's incredible how we're talking about a 1975 album right now.
Yeah, like,
it's just when we both listen to it, and I think you as well, Neil. Like, I would not expect you to speak graciously about it at all. But it's
what do you mean? I can appreciate good pop music. You know, it's
a bit bitter in your old age.
Guitar, you know. I suppose the only thing I've got against it was the comparison with OK Computer.
Yeah, but that's lazy journalism.
Exactly.
It shouldn't be compared to another album.
Yeah, and I think you pulled me up on it before, Andy. It was like, the reviews I've read, it was like, this is this generation's OK Computer. And I instantly think, well, it doesn't sound like OK Computer, but it does that make it this generation's OK Computer?
I feel like it is this generation's kind of album.
Yeah,
it's this generation's 1975 album.
Yeah, it's this generation's
I don't know. Yeah,
but I suppose in slight defence of the journalist who kind of wrote it, you're going to go, what, how else would you describe it in terms of its significance in current standing? Yes. Then I kind of
that's the thing, isn't it? It's about I don't know, but I'm struggling to because OK Computer, when I listened to it, every single song of that pushed something a little bit.
Yeah,
I mean, there were kind of real singles off it, and they got to a stage where this was just frankly bizarre. And with the 1975 record, it's great. Every song on it is great, you know. And there's still a hell of a lot of just really generic pop on it. And, well, there's nothing about every single song that pushes something for me. I like every song on it.
Musically, it doesn't really push the boundaries that far, but I think as an album,
I think it does. It's a pop album, and I think they've actually, there's so much talk about pop not being a dirty word anymore. You see that kind of still used in interviews with pop groups, like people that aren't ashamed to show their pop. Like, this is actually kind of like truthful pop. This is woke pop. Oh my god.
Sorry.
Jesus. I put the album on, I listened to the whole thing today, and I was like, I put it on expecting to hate it. I didn't hate it, you know. There were some songs I didn't like, and there were some songs that I thought were different enough and were interesting enough to kind of warrant the reviews that it's had. And you know, it is a good album.
Yeah, I think it's more about the experimentation within a pop album, not the other way around. It's not an experiment album with some pop songs thrown in.
It's like when Girls Aloud did Chemistry, you know, the concept album.
You're saying that album's better?
On a par.
But I actually think that's quite a good bridging point, because I think if you do the kind of Radiohead, Girls Aloud 1975, you think the way in which we consume media, music, etc., then there's a big change. Radiohead, you would sit and you would listen to the whole album and you put your headphones on and you would indulge in your fix, and that would be it. You would focus on it and that would be it. Now we have our phones, so we can't concentrate for longer than 15 seconds. Girls Aloud are in that midpoint that where you go, wow, this is kind of quite fun pop, kind of quite like it. And then 1975, they're in a generation where their target audience cannot hold their attention anything longer than 25 seconds. Yeah. So you kind of go, you're never going to get what happened with Radiohead, because that's a different world. That message would never come across.
If you match that, you could say it's an even greater achievement.
Yeah, I feel like really that's really depressing almost. You know what I mean? As a point
he
of
said
view
in his massive kitchen.
You've got me there, Dunk. Yes, I'm really, really depressed. Lovely kitchen I have.
The only thing you've got to aspire to is better ventilation.
Yes, basically. One day I will open these bifolds windows that are completely unnecessary. Why not, though? I suppose that why can't... And I suppose, going back to OK Computer, I know I keep going about radio, particularly on this podcast, it is my specialist subject. OK Computer... was at the end of Britpop, and many people have said that it kind of almost destroyed Britpop in a little kind of sense. You know, there was this whole popular...
It was the rebellion.
And it's like, no, fuck you. I can make a guitar album that doesn't have to be like that. I can make a record that is pop or is of the time and can still be successful and doesn't have to be what's been before. And I don't believe there is... I kind of feel like the Arctic Monkeys record is more of an OK Computer moment than this 1975 record. You know what I mean? Perhaps.
Where the 1975 are coming from, they were such a pop band that they have created experimental album for a pop band, whereas Arctic Monkeys have experimented before and I've been slightly more artistic before.
I suppose my kind of counter to that was that, you know, Radiohead were off the back of, you know, Creep, they're probably off the back of High and Dry and all those kind of records, and then they, you know, it's just ridiculous. OK Computer in that kind of
I always felt that there's a little part of Radiohead that they were, I hate kind of bringing up kind of the class system, but you think that Britpop was based around kind of working class lads actually rebelling against kind of, with the exception of Pulp, rebelling against kind of art school musicians.
Yes, yeah, you're right.
And then Radiohead turned it on its head again because they then came from a different standpoint. And I almost feel that, that there was a shift in that, that they, that that was, I'm not saying that Britpop wasn't intelligent music, and Blair, obviously, Damon Albarn has moved on to do various things, but Blair were fundamentally kind of like, you know, it was council estate rock. And that's the way they're doing it, or that's the way that they purport it to be.
Yeah.
Radiohead suddenly came from a pool of intelligence, etc., 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 and it shifted the dimension.
Yeah.
And I think that was why that was what was deemed as being the end of Britpop.
Yeah. Okay, so we've only got a few minutes left till you have to go and do your proper job, Duncan.
My proper job, thanks.
Go to work for a living. So historically, we have a low light.
Right.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So
it's a little bit, it's going to be a little bit different, isn't it? Because we've talked about a lot of low lights when we've played to three people in front of a river of shit and whatnot. But have you got anything that sort of transcends to your career?
Oh my, ever?
Yeah. Ever? What? Yeah. Sort of a
television or
restaurant. Or otherwise, or you know.
I mean, there's many. I think that one of my low lights was when I first sort of started out. I'd done a little bit of telly, and I got booked to a food festival in Chester. And food festivals fundamentally work at weekends. Chester City Council decided, because it's a tourist place, that they could run it on a Thursday through. So I got booked to do 11:30 on a Thursday morning in Chester. So I'm there, and there are 12 people in the room, and I would say 9 of them come in because it's somewhere to sit rather than anything else. And then a guy walks in, and bear in mind this is a food festival, and he's bought his flask of coffee and his own sandwiches. Right? So if I am the stage, he's kind of sitting, glancing over his shoulder at me, facing the other way, and he unwraps his sandwiches, sits, eats sandwiches, gets his coffee, and then he kind of eats a sandwich, drinks his coffee, puts the lid on, screws up the foil, drops it on the floor, and walks out. I think that takes some beating.
Yeah. If ever Dutch Uncles went did a food festival, that would be it.
It sounds like all the times we support the Cortinas, really.
Have we gone through the low light before of when we supported the Cortinas at Life Cafe early on Peter Street? This will be our low light for the week. So we supported them. We supported them a few times. And, and we haven't been appreciated, to put it lightly. They didn't quite get the jazzy 7-4, like, weird proggy shit.
Yeah, don't try to do finger clicks.
But I think the second song, pretty much the 50 people that had come early to watch us, I'd say about 99% of them had their back turned to us.
Yeah,
it felt so personal. As well. They'd one look and go, okay, and turn round.
Yeah, it was like playing to the playing to a Poznan, really, wasn't it?
But also, like when you're playing at the Life Cafe, I don't know what it is now. It's a different bar now, but like it's all glass, isn't it? The front of it was all glass, and we could see out to the road, and we had 5 people on our guest list, and they weren't allowed in, but we could see them through the glass on the other side. So it was like these, you know, 100 people with their back to us, and then our mates on the other side of the glass. Yeah, like looking as sad as we were.
I love that.
And that is that for the first series of Chips of Chorlton. Just want to say a really big thanks to Simon Rimmer for coming over and finishing off the series with us. I want to thank as well all the other guests that we've had on in this first series. And another big thanks to Andy, Robin and Duncan from Dutch Uncles. We are planning on coming back next year around about March time. We'll maybe try and make it a little bit more professional, so it's not so slapdash and my dog isn't barking in the background every episode. But thank you very much for the people who've listened and the people who have regularly listened. We can see by our figures that more people are listening as the episodes go on, so a really big thanks to everyone out there. Please subscribe. Follow us on Twitter, follow us on Instagram, it's at Chips of Chorlton, and keep your eye out for our kind of launch of Series 2 next year. Thanks a lot, guys. See you in 2019.